Safe Routing, milepost 20.04. Diverging clear, milepost 20.06. Welcome to Diverging Clear, your transportation podcast, with your hosts, William Moore and Jermaine Walker.
What's up, what's up, what's up? Welcome back to the Diverging Clear Podcast, episode number 2. Good to see everybody again. Been a minute, man. Don't even know where to begin, but I'm going to try to keep this moving so I ain't taking up too much of your time. Today's episode, furlough or not. Reason why I call it that is because just going to evaluate some of the stuff that typically happens during when the economy softens a little bit, volumes drop again, some of the principles that railroads commonly use. But we'll get to that here in a second. But don't forget to follow me on social media. You can find the Diverging Clear Podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google Play, Anchor, and any other platform where you listen to your favorite podcast. We're there. Diverging Clear, this is season number 3. Sorry, it's only been episode number 2, but we'll talk about that here in a second. So, let's get it cracking. So, let's start about where I've been and what I've been doing since since episode number 1 was the season premiere was recorded in March of last year. March of 2023. Well, first off, like I said, I'm no longer at Amtrak. I currently work for, if you can see the logo there, for HH Intermodal. Currently interim director of safety and business development. Hoping to be dropping that interim tag soon. We'll see how that works out. But I've been traveling a lot. I then got back in the freight game, on the freight side of things and railroading. Really enjoying it, learning a lot, updating my knowledge bank quite a bit. Like I said, in particular, I'm in the intermodal side of things now. So in my role, director of safety, I am responsible company-wide for our ramping operations. Of course, we do the loading, unloading, groundwork at various terminals on the CSX system as of now. Currently, my terminals consist of Bedford Park, Chicago. We got small operations there. Detroit, Cleveland, which I just got back from a couple hours ago. North Baltimore, just south of Toledo. Cleveland, as I mentioned. Louisville. That hurts my tongue when I say that, but I call it Louisville. That's what it is. Y'all people from the South gonna be mad at me because I don't say Louisville. I say Louisville. I move my lips. Then I also got operations down in, we just recently expanded operations back down into the Florida area where I got groundmen and hostlers and Jacksonville, Winter Haven, and Tampa. So those are all of my terminals that I'm responsible for. Safety, rules, compliance, making sure our people are up to date, making sure they're doing what they need to do so that we conduct safe operations. That's one of my biggest passions, always has been, as long as I've been in the rail game. as the safety aspect of it. I always believe that you can have operations and safety are one and the same. You know, I just don't, I practice what I preach, and I, you know, one of the things I always tell people is the way that you came in is the way I need you to go home. So if you come in with 10 fingers and 10 toes, you're going, if I got anything to do with it, that's the way you're going back home. So, you know, I just safety has always been a big thing for me on the railroad side of things. As a dispatcher, guys will probably tell you that worked my territory or anything like that, that I didn't play about safety. I always made sure that they were good. We were in clear communication. And that's some of the things that I bring to this role that I kind of like. I've been, you know, trying to change our culture, trying to make these guys understand that, you know, most people, a lot of times, that all the safety officers around, people get attitudes. Well, I'm trying to develop a culture where, and so far, so good. I got a bunch of good guys on my team at HH Intermodal that buy in, that believe in doing it the right way. So, you know, that's, it's big to me because I just want them to understand that at the end of the day, you got to go home safe, but you can do your job safe. But, you know, people always forget about, they think doing your job safe means going slow. Oftentimes, as statistics show, when you start trying to slow down operations, you know, that's typically where mistakes and accidents and mishaps occur. So I always hammer home safety, and people forget about that part after the end, safely and efficiently. So, you know, in my role here, that's what I'm doing. I'm enjoying it. I'm working every day, trying to improve, making sure that I'm staying on top of things, making sure that I'm catching trends or anything. So, you know, it's been pretty good. So, like I said, plus it presented me opportunity to get into a different level of railroading. Let's just be honest. I'm in a interim director's role with HH Intermodal. Not being petty or nothing, but no way in hell I was going to get to director's level at Amtrak. It's just, it is what it is. But this opportunity, I always said that if I had this opportunity, I would take full advantage of it. And that's what I'm going to do. Make the changes that need to be made. Not drag my feet on things, especially on the safety side of things. Just make sure that I'm affecting change in a positive way, and making sure that that everybody's on board. Try not to leave any leaves unturned. The one thing I used to hate when I was in lower roles was that the message would be up here, but it would never get disseminated down here. And so that's one of the things that I try to make sure that I don't do. But, you know, I said, it's pretty good. Can't complain, but I just kind of wanted to give y'all, without rambling too much, which I think I already did, just to let you know what I've been doing. If you follow me on social media, you've probably seen some of my stories and some of the locations I've been in. But yeah, that's it. That's where I'm at. But right now, let me go ahead and get to the meat of this podcast. I'm not going to try to keep you long. I'm going to try to keep this rolling as quick as possible and just deliver the message. So as we transition into that, let's see if I can do this right. Y'all gotta excuse me because I gotta make sure I ain't in the way of my banner that's about to come up. So here we go. So I'm starting off with this story. STB's Alderman rips into Union Pacific CEO Jim Vena. There's a reason I laugh about that, but I'll keep that as an inside joke to myself. So at the Rail Trends Conference, the current STB chairman, Marty Oberman, ripped into the CEO of course, Union Pacific. Mr. Vena just took over Union Pacific, and one of his first things that he did was furlough employees. Pretty interesting thing that he did. It's kind of par for the course for Mr. Vena. I kind of had the opportunity to work under Mr. Vena when I was at the Canadian National, and I kind of predicted that once he assumed his CEO role of the Union Pacific, so people was getting laid off. And that's what happened. But let me read you this story here. So, this article, this was in Freight Waves. Marty Oberman, chairman of the Surface Transportation Board, has several complimentary statements in his address Thursday to the Rail Trends Conference about progress in the nation's rail sector. He called out several Class 1 CEOs by name for praise. One who didn't receive compliments was Union Pacific CEO Jim Vena, who assumed the role in August. In contrast to his Rail Trends address last year, where his criticisms were more broad and not as company-specific, Oberman, who announced at the end of his speech that he was leaving the STB, began his remarks with what could be viewed as praise. For example, he talked about a number of positive developments across the network, led by the acquisition of the Kansas City Southern by Canadian Pacific, the former Canadian Pacific Kansas City, a single system linking Mexico, the U.S., and Canada. That move, Oberman said, was likely to have led to other joint ventures in the industry, including the recent upgrade of intermodal service between BNSF and J.B. Hunt, and an agreement earlier this year among CPKC, CSX, and Shortline conglomerates, Genesee and Wyoming, to create a direct interchange in Alabama that is targeted at improving service between Mexico and the U.S. But after praising by name such CEOs as Keith Creel, who also worked under Jim Vena, LCPKC, and the management of BNSF, Oberman turned his attention to the Union Pacific and Vena. His primary criticism is that even as other companies have disavowed furloughs and layoffs as a regularly invoked tool, UP has gone a different way, Oberman said. UP has had furloughs as recent as this week. In sharp contrast with the other railroads, his first few moves leave me concerned and bewildered, Oberman said. The furloughs will necessitate reducing previously budgeted maintenance during the last 6 weeks of this year by tens of millions of dollars. And if that cut in maintenance was in the budget for 2023, Oberman said, presumably the budget makers determined that maintenance needed to be done. Union Pacific, UP President Beth Whited pushed back against Oberman on Friday, the second day of the annual sold-out Rail Trends Conference in New York. Departing from her prepared remarks, she made reference to Oberman's statement as having given the audience the mistaken impression that there is deferred maintenance happening at the end of the day. She did not mention Oberman by name. Whited said that normal maintenance program at the UP is that track, tie, and bridge replacement work starts in the calendar year in the southern part of the country and makes its way north. When it is completed, we allow those workers to take the rest of the year off and then come back to work in January, she said. As we speak, there are thousands of workers doing inspections to keep the system safe. During the question and answer session, Whited said that UP did furlough slightly less than 100 mechanical employees earlier in the fall, but all were offered opportunities elsewhere in the company. A number of them took us up and said, yes, I'd like to work in another location, she said. So the net furlough was not that many. UP is actively hiring in several locations, Whited said. Hiring is particularly difficult in areas with significant needs, but where the population base isn't high, North Platte, Nebraska, side of the John Rail Yard was cited as an example. So the reason why I kind of brought that up, I'll read another slide. second. Yes, sir. I'm kind of messed up my controls a little bit. Hey, so that was the last part of the article that you can see. Yeah, right. Other way. You see it. I'm definitely pointing the wrong way. But it's right there. So that's the end of the article there. So the reason why I said again, why I started off with this portion of the episode talking about furloughs and how the STB chairman, Mr. Oberman, was calling out the UP for cuts is because I had the privilege of working under Mr. Venom when he was at the Canadian National, and I predicted to one of my close friends, Mr. Page, we had this conversation when Mr. Venom was first named the new CEO of the Union Pacific. First thing I told Josh was, I said, he about to lay some people off. And he's like, all right. He's like, no, I don't see. I said, he's about to lay some people off. This is standard operating procedures for Mr. Venom. He has his reasons behind it, but every time he's had the opportunity to lay people, he's never saw a person that he didn't like to lay off. I'll say that. And I'll kind of go through some of the things that, but the reason I said that was brought up was because oftentimes when the economy softens just a little bit, volume drops just a little bit, the railroads go to cutting people, whether it's in the mechanical, engineering, maintenance away, T&E. That is usually the first thing that you see go, and to me it's a bad idea that they do that. The reason it's a bad idea is because, and I'll give you a little bit of background evidence once I get into it, but the time that you spend training, getting those people ready to be able to capable of running and operating, working in that operating environment of trains, and a mechanic, and a mechanical department, and a maintenance away, and you lay them off, well, you need those people to carry out those tasks, you done laid them off, and then now you're overburdening your current staff because it takes so long to train. So I believe now to get a sufficient amount of work or be proficient enough to operate a train as a conductor, as an engineer, usually takes anywhere from 12 to 16 months to be proficient enough to do it on your own. It takes time. So by cutting those people, and this is, like I said, historically it happens every time. Every time you cut somebody, by the time you cut them and you save those operating expenses, as it's quote-unquote called, you save those operating expenses to, you know, offset the volumes of the drop in revenue due to drop in volume, carloads, or different things like that. But it never pans out to where it makes sense, because what always ends up happening is, and like I said, I can just recall from the time I graduated from college, I can go through a list of them. You can look them up. You can believe me or not, but these are facts. Do your own research if you don't believe me. It tells a story. So the first one I'll talk about is in 2003, right when I graduated from school. I'll never forget. Railroads started laying people off, which was, for me, was a bad news, because I was like, shoot, it's going to be hard to get a railroad job now they're laying everybody off. So I remember putting my application in for the EJ&E. They were hiring, then they weren't hiring. So everybody had either froze hiring or they were furloughing people. So in that, probably that was 2003. So I went to work for Intermodal Contractor, worked over there until I actually got called back almost a year and a half later to go interview at the J. But at that time, railroads was laying people off. So then what ended up happening between 2003 and the beginning of 2004 is where those cuts were made. That kind of, it was a really soft recession, but that traffic started rebounding. When it rebounded, it didn't just gradually creep up. It went from a downward turn, kind of going down, 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 then it shot back up. When that rebound came, it came so quick and so rapidly that the railroads went on a mass hiring spree, trying to get people back, trying to get people qualified to get to be available to move these trains. Now, had they just maintained their staffing, they probably ended up losing volume and potential revenue because they didn't have people to move the cars. And then that traffic that was spiking was sitting in yards for years or for days and months at a time. And people went back to moving their stuff via truck because the rails couldn't handle it because the railroads didn't have the manpower to do it. So that was one example of it. Another example was, everybody knows about the Great Recession, 2008, when the housing market crashed, the rails crashed, everything crashed. We all know about that. Those, of course, railroads again, furloughed. Now at that time, the Canadian National was in the process of purchasing EJ&E. At that time, Mr. Vanner was, well, I believe he was the senior VP of Southern Operations at that time at the CN, or somewhere, one of those. He was a pretty high-level guy. But right immediately after they acquired the EJ&E, they did massive layoffs of J employees. They took a lot of our T&E and put them in other departments. So we lost some good engineers that ended up going to the signal department, CNS. We had others going to different. We lost a lot of our T&E to other departments because they did a mass furlough. When that economy rebounded, and when these guys went to other departments, they had to give up all of their seniority rights for T&E. When that economy started coming back, the CN went on a hiring spree again to cover the traffic, even on just the EJ&E. So we had lost all of these really good employees that were engineers, that were conductors, that was, just all different crafts. We lost all of those people and their knowledge and their ability to move equipment because of the short-sightedness of not being able, not holding on to those employees and allowing them to ride out the wave. Like, everybody didn't have to be laid off, but that's what they did. And then, again, here goes this mass hiring. It takes a long time for people to get qualified, blah, blah, blah. Again, we miss opportunity. The rail industry misses an opportunity to be ready for the rebound as opposed to chasing, having people ready for the rebound as opposed to chasing the tail. And then once again, traffic shoots up. There's not enough T&E to move it. So the traffic goes down, it goes back to truck. And then now you got this hire, you didn't hire the people, but the volume didn't drop. Then what do you do? Again, you furlough people. And it's just like an endless cycle, It's like, does anybody else look at the forecast? Do anybody else realize that when the volumes drop, they always come back? They always come back. It's never not been a time that traffic goes down and it doesn't rebound and rebound sometimes 2, 3, 4, 5 fold. But it just always seems like that's the low-hanging fruit is to furlough employees, cut operating expenses. Okay, so that was the recession of 2000, the Great Recession that we all know about. So the next one, I believe, was the PSR furloughs. That started in about 20, I got it listed in my notes as 2018, 2019, but it really started in about 2017. It was when everybody started implementing PSR, the smaller crews, bigger trains, less train movements. They started cutting those crews. So the PSR furloughs, again, focusing on driving down the operating costs, focusing on driving down operating expenses. And so you began this process of, again, dwindling the workforce. They're running bigger trains, so they're running less trains. They're running fewer locals because of PSR, PSR, PSR. So when all of those furloughs took place, and they again dwindled the workforce, the mother of all drops or traffic booms occurred. And that was in 2020 with the pandemic. So volume dropped initially. At the very beginning of the pandemic, volume started to drop a little. I'll tell a story about that too, but let's stay on the freight for now. So the volumes dropped a little. All right, actually, they really didn't, they never really dropped. They kind of stayed the same and then they spiked in an upward direction. The railroads weren't prepared at all for it. Because of all of the laying off, the furloughs they have been doing, because of the PSR, precision scheduled railroading of all of the class ones, have been reducing their workforce. When the pandemic hit and that traffic shot up, people had extra money to spend, people was ordering a lot of, you know, stuff online for delivery, they weren't ready. And they had been, and unions, everybody had already been complaining about workers being overworked because of the fact that they had been dwindling numbers. And when that pandemic traffic hit and it shot up, wasn't nobody prepared. And again, they went to chasing their tail, trying to hire people. And again, volume shot up. And then they started coming back down because, you know, the railroads eventually said, well, you know, we're getting a hold of it. And yeah, be honest with you, that could be up for debate, whether you got a hold of being able to manage the traffic, because a lot of that traffic went away. Might have went to other locations, might have went to other, but to say that you managed the traffic, I think it's a little bit of a misleading statement, but I digress. But anyway, so you had the dwindling down leading up to the pandemic. And then you had that spike in the railroads couldn't handle it. I mean, there were embargoes in Chicago. It was freight not moving out of the ports. It really impacted inflation when you really think about it, because there was literally nobody to move the stuff. The cost of freight, even trucking, the cost to move a container from China to the West Coast. The cost of everything went up, and then when you didn't have the manpower to move it, it made everything even more premium, which to me is never accounted for when people talk about inflation. But shipping cost has a lot to do with inflation. It affects everything that we do. But again, the railroads weren't ready. The railroads had PSR'd themselves into that position. And again, the furloughs from the previous years came back to rear its ugly head at that point, and affected the railroads at that point. Now, one caveat to that is, and I can speak a little bit more freely about it now that I'm not an employee at Amtrak. So during the pandemic, or right prior to the pandemic, Amtrak had an engineers class. There's a lot of people about to retire, a lot of people. So they knew that their numbers were getting ready to, they needed to have replacements in place for the aging engineer force. So there was a pretty significant number of engineers that they had in training, about ready to complete, whether they was out in training out on the East Coast of Delaware, had they returned to their terminals. Some of them had returned to their terminals for the last leg of training out on the road. So there was a lot of transition going on when the pandemic hit. Instead of Amtrak maintaining that class, keeping that class going, letting these guys get road qualified, even though the traffic had the trains running almost empty at that time, we were still running trains. They could allow these engineers to get qualified. They chose not to. They chose to cut a class of 40 engineers. 40. We had guys that were just waiting to be signed off on cars, a few more trips, and they could have been signed off. Made them go back to their conductor ranks. It was the biggest, and you won't hear this from Amtrak, you heard all kind of other stuff, but without me bashing them too much, it was poor judgment. They should have let those guys, because what ended up happening during the pandemic was a lot of engineers retired. They weren't expecting that. They thought everybody was going to stay. So there was a rash of retirements. And some people just didn't get, some people also just left the rail industry also. So we were canceling trains, we were canceling service because we literally did not have engineers. We had a class set to take over those spots that had they just maintained it. Again, not looking at the forecast, not forecasting that the fact that the traffic was going to come back. You would have thought that we was going to shut down in the next 3 to 4 months. That was short-sightedness in my opinion. You should have looked out and saw, even though the traffic went down, it was going to come back. Nobody took that philosophy. So therefore, when the traffic was returning, we canceling trains. We either didn't have equipment, we didn't have the manpower, either on the mechanical side or on the T&E side to move trains. To be honest with you, following the pandemic, Amtrak probably could have turned this first profit. But because they didn't have the crews and because they didn't have the equipment, because they had furloughed a lot of the mechanical people that took care of the equipment, our trains were running with shortened cars. Some trains were being canceled for extended periods of time because there wasn't enough equipment. And to me, that was short-sightedness. And to me, that was a big mistake. So why do I bring all of this up? The reason I bring this up is because at some point in time, the railroads have got to get I understand. The stockholders' focus is really killing a lot of opportunities for the short-term profits. It's killing the ability of having long-term profits. And it's constantly the dog chasing its tail, because when volume is high, not enough people to move it, or handle the mechanical is low. Then when you build, by the time you build it up, it shifts back up. So you're constantly, it's a constant missing the opportunity where it should be able to be level where, okay, volume drops, but we're able to keep our employment the same. So that way, when the volume starts coming back up, we got the people to move it, and then they can both happen at the same time. They can both be in sync with where the volume returns, the manpower is there. So that's my big thing. And that's what Oberman was going off about on Vena about, was the fact that oftentimes we lay off for the short-term gain or short-term cutting costs. But it stymies the railroads, because when that volume and those shipments return, those carloads return, the rail industry is never properly staffed to handle it. Now, about a year ago, a lot of the railroads announced that they were going to shift to doing things a little bit differently, where they wouldn't furlough crews or furlough crew members. They would keep them on the payroll for the, inevitable return of traffic. So, for the most part, I haven't seen CN, I haven't seen Canadian Pacific, I haven't seen CSX, I have not seen Norfolk Southern, I haven't seen BNSF. Am I missing somebody? Of all the major class ones, I haven't seen anybody lay anybody off except for the Union Pacific. They are the outlier in this, which is a good reason why I'm glad Mr. Oberman called them out, because you have got to keep that, the turnaround time from hiring a person, getting them through the background checks, getting them trained. You always are going to miss your window. You'll never be properly staffed. You're always going to be either overstaffed or understaffed. Why don't you maintain that staffing level so that when it comes back, you got people that's been constantly working and they're ready to accept those trains and ready to get called out more because they're on the payroll and they're already trained. They're already qualified. And then that way you got people to move those trains, move that volume. I don't like the furlough and the layoff, bring back. I don't like that because it does two things. One, it doesn't give people a sense of security. People don't want to go and work for a place where they don't know if they're going to have a check from day to week, from week to week, or how long they're going to be without a check. You know, those things affect the recruiting. You know, a lot of railroads are having problems getting people to come and work for them. People are interested in coming to work for them because of the inconsistencies, the lack of job security. You got the money. It ain't no doubt whether you got the money. All the money that's spent on stock buybacks, that was exposed during the contract negotiations that were recently signed. But you spend all of this time constantly nickel and diming the employment, but you keep missing opportunities to actually have the people ready to go when the traffic returns. And if you don't have people when the traffic returns, and those shipments either end up going to truck or some other mode of transportation, now you've missed another opportunity. And I think that's what Mr. Venner was, what Mr. Oberman was getting on Mr. Venner about. Why are y'all doing this? And it's not just T&E. It happens in mechanical. It happens in engineering. It happens in all those different areas where you need to keep those essential people in there doing what they need to do so that your railroad is ready. You know, one thing I remember about the 2008-2009 housing decline. So as I mentioned before, the Canadian National was in the process of acquiring the EJ&E. I was also in my last year of my master's work at Purdue University. So my final paper I wrote was on what I would do if I was running the Canadian National as we were acquiring the EJ&E. My big thing was okay, so as the volumes were dropping, traffic was literally bottoming out. I said, you know what the CN should do right now? As they're acquiring the J, as the traffic is down, they should take this opportunity to upgrade the J. Start the work right away. Get this work done on the EJ&E, extend the sidings, add the main. Whatever capital projects you were gonna do, go ahead and get them done now while the traffic is down. Now you gotta, you know, nobody knew when the Great Recession was gonna start to turn around. But you had yourself, you acquired the J in February of 2009. If you would have started right away with this, so you got shovels in the ground by the start of the upcoming construction season, you would have been prepared for that volume that was coming back. And as we all know, as the CN got dragged into Congress for blocking crossings, we were running 12,000 foot trains on the territories that didn't have sidings big enough or double track big enough or yards big. We were running trains that should not have no business being ran on the J because we were still running with ABS and spring switches. But had they taken that opportunity during that window to invest in that infrastructure and stop holding on every dollar, and like I said, they're smart people that work in that railroad. They knew that downturn was not going to last long. We didn't know when it was going to come back. I am not a financial analyst, but I can look at a forecast. I can look at historical forecasts and see when a recession hits, cause and effect. When a recession hits, what does a rebound look like? How long does it usually take to rebound? What happens with the freight volume? Not a very hard analysis to do. So, in other words, stop delaying off. Stop being scared when the economy or the volumes drop a little bit or a recession occurs. When those things occur, take advantage of the opportunities to get stuff done, to get your deferred maintenance done, to expand your capacity. The reason I say that is because when you're trying to do capacity projects, when your traffic is through the roof, you are causing a nightmare for shippers, for everyone involved in the supply chain. Take those opportunities to train people. Take those opportunities to upgrade your infrastructure. Take those opportunities to not hoard your money, but to properly invest it so when things come back nice and strong, you're ready. That's the whole purpose of this, being ready. Take advantage of those opportunities to be ready for when the next uptick comes. It doesn't, it bottoms out, but it's never, ever has not returned. And returned at a very stronger pace than what it was at before it dropped. So when it comes to furloughs, when it comes to deferred maintenance, when the volume drops, don't furlough, don't divest. Don't do neither one of those. That should not be in your strategy. That should not be, if you want to make money, you want to make that money back that you lost when the volumes dropped. It's coming back if you just hold on and carry those expenses for an extra 3 quarters, an extra 4 quarters. Hang on to those expenses, because trust me, if you hang on to those employees, T&E, mechanical, engineering, you hang on to them when that rebound comes back. That rebound, that trend is going to continue to go up because you got the people in place to handle it instead of trying to chase your tail and hire people after the traffic is already there. So, yeah, when I say furloughing now, I think the answer should always be now. Keep them people, keep them on staff, keep them ready, keep them running trains, keep everybody rolling through the rotation so that they're ready when the volume returns. It will pay off extremely high dividends as opposed to those few dollars you're saving for that short period of time. It will come back and it will, mark my words, it will make more money by hanging on to that staff, those train staff that you already invested in. Hang on to them to the ends. That way, when the traffic comes back, you're all good. I actually did that whole episode without taking a dang commercial break. Let's wrap it up then. Thank you for tuning in to episode number 2. Sorry it's been so long, but episode number 2 of the Divergent Clear podcast, furlough or not. Just wanted to run through that real quick because I don't foresee anything coming, but the UP stuff kind of made me want to just talk about the topic historically, what happens, what doesn't happen, what the trends are. I wanted to cover that because I don't want to see any other railroads laying off. And to be honest with you, I don't think it pays off dividends at all. I think it lacks, I don't think it allows you to grow properly when the traffic returns. That's just what my data shows. It is what it is. But like I said, again, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on at the Divergent Clear Podcast on, Yeah, don't follow me on X because I don't do anything on X no more. But I'm all on social media at the Divergent Clear Podcast, on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Also follow me on Spotify, Apple, Google Play, all the platforms that you get your favorite podcasts on. Once again, thank you for tuning in. And hopefully we'll talk to you soon. Have a happy Thanksgiving. And I'm out.
Divergent Clear is sponsored by EME Rail Solutions, LLC. We don't own rail cars, locomotives, or tracks, but if you do, we provide cutting-edge solutions to maximize your assets. Visit us at emerail.net to learn more.
So, have you checked out my podcast yet? What? Did you even know I had a podcast? Well, if not,
let me introduce you to the Diverging Clear Podcast.
Approach Diverging, milepost 20.04. Diverging Clear, milepost 20.06. Welcome to Diverging Clear, your transportation podcast, with your hosts, William Moore and Jermaine Walker.
Just wanted to kind of research a little bit, like, exactly why. Why did Pullman shut down? Why did America divest, or as another term people like to use, defund passenger rail service and trains? We were still doing this, not knowing what this virus or this pandemic was going to be. We showed up every day. And the things that the railroad, the carriers, the class ones did was offer some bogus contract that they knew nobody would want. And, any comments that you got there, Jermaine?
It's got to be a little bit of a culture shock to employees that are at MRL. You know, MRL, like, one, I knew personally a lot of people that was interested in going to Montana just to be there and be a part of the company. But I've heard nothing but great things from the people that do work there. And
so, did you like what you saw? Did you like what you heard? If so, go to the Diverging Clear Podcast and subscribe to it on YouTube. It's also available on Spotify, Apple, Google Play, Anchor, and any other place you listen to your fine podcasts. Remember, thank you. Check us out. Share it. Like it. Trying to get us out there. Some great information. A lot of stuff that's important to everything that we do on there. Thanks again. Take care. Talk to you soon.